Looking to get the most out of your money, time, and even better, your points and miles? I'm Chris Hutchins. I'm a lifelong optimizer, and I've sold 2 companies, racked up millions of points, and traveled the world to over 60 countries almost always for free. And I host All the Hacks, an award-winning podcast trusted by more than 1 million listeners that turns big ideas into quick tactical moves you can start using today to upgrade your life, money, and travel. Recent episodes have covered how to book business class seats for economy prices, how to make an easy $3,000 a month from online deals, and tiny habits that you can use to buy back hours of your time each week. There's no fluff in the show. It's just proven playbooks to travel better, spend smarter, and design a life you're excited about. So search All the Hacks. That's All the Hacks in your podcast app. Hit follow and start upgrading your life today.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is
Dariano. We call him Day Day for short.
Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
What would you tell us now is keeping you gay? Pop culture, porn culture, sandwich culture, or otherwise?
Yeah, it's probably porn.
Welcome back to That's a Gay Ass Podcast, the podcast that asks, whose fault is it that you're gay? It is me, Eric Williams, with another gorgeous gay ass episode featuring Kevin James Thornton. You've probably seen him on your phone as he is a global comedian sensation. He toured, I think he said like 80 cities last year. You've definitely seen him on the internet. He's famous for doing those auto-tune stories that he sings where he's like, at my super fundamentalist college when it was the 90s. If you have not seen those, go to the description and click on the link to his Insta or TikTok. So good. Such an amazing, amazing social media presence and a gorgeous gay-ass guest. This week, we have a lot of good conversation about Midwestern trauma and porn, which is my specialty. But before we get into it, I want to give a huge thank you to all the new Patreon subscribers. Last week's episode with Dan Savage, I had amazing messages from all the listeners, and a bunch of new people signed up for the bonus episodes, which if you want to get in on that, Gay Ass Slatreon, this week's bonus episode, it is BT Gay Ass S, Behind These Gay Ass Scenes, where I talk about the upcoming guests we have confirmed and talk about the horny birthday party we had for my husband, Matt, this past weekend, including the details of the Polaroid nudes that were taken and compiled in a fucking photo book during the actual party. So that is on patreon.com/gayasspodcast. It's literally $5 for a month. That's it. And we're growing a gorgeous Slatreon there. So come join us. But enough of that shite. Let's get into this episode. Stick around for not only a beautiful reason that Kevin is now gay, but also a conversation about character actresses where we actually help Kevin find his choice live in living color on this actual pod. I love you. Stay gay ass. I feel like I'm feeling loopy on this Monday morning. But my first question was going to be like, is there a God? let's start.
No, easier. Next question.
Okay. Great. Next question. Is there hell? I'm kidding. Let's not get into
yes.
Okay, so we've confirmed no God, yes hell. When you're in heaven, you're served a meal by a chef that can read your deepest thoughts and wishes. What is the star of the meal that you're being served?
The entree? Is that
yeah.
what you mean?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm the star of the meal.
Sorry.
You know what? I hate to be basic, but I have such a thing for pizza.
Don't Yeah, we accept the pizza in heaven. In fact, that's the name of your next tour, 2025, Pizza in Heaven. No, I think that's gorgeous. And I'm glad you're going through my lightning round of questioning for the start of this gay ass podcast. Let's actually ask some real questions. Kevin, I was planning this new season and I was putting a list of guests together that I was like dreaming of talking to. And this is very special for me because I love your comedy. I love what you stand for. And I think that you are perfectly aligned with this podcast. And I just want to express that gratitude.
Oh, well, you're welcome. I'm happy to do it. Happy to be here.
Before I ask you the famous podcast question, can you tell the listeners, like, with a little bit of a BTS of, I know that you have been touring the globe. Your comedy is just absolutely killing it. But you had this journey of, I know you said you moved to LA, what, like?
Like 15, a little over 15 years ago. Yeah.
Yeah. And I love that video where you talk about how you moved in with a boyfriend at the time and that lasted like a year. So can you tell, like, how did you get from moving to LA? At some point, you said you lived in your car at a certain station in your life. How did you go from point A to point now?
Oh, there's like 27 points between
yeah.
there and here. But yeah, you know, I moved to Los Angeles and I had never even done stand-up comedy. It was just like, that's what I'm going to do next. I don't know. That just seems like, it seems challenging. It seems like it seems like something interesting. So yeah, I had just started dating this guy. We moved out there together. I didn't know him well enough at all. And it was this weird thing where like, I was actually doing pretty well in the club scene. I was getting my foot in the door pretty quickly, but like, my home life was just in shambles. So like I'd go out and I'd have a great night at a club and then I'd come home and it would just be a total nightmare. It was just this like wild up and down. And I remember I stuck with him for like a year because he kept like spinning it like he's going through a lot. He really needed me to stick by him. So I did. And then one day he'd got up and left and didn't tell me where he was going. And so I decided to take a walk down that like strip of gay bars in West Hollywood, you know, like you do on a Sunday. And he was like standing on the corner, like holding hands with this guy and like kissing him. And I had no idea. I marched up to both of them and I screamed his name down the sidewalk of West Hollywood and literally like 200 people were like, oh, I was so furious because it had been such an awful year. And I'm like, we could have ended this months ago.
Yeah. And now you're watching him canoodle in front of high tops.
Yes, I know. It was. And so I moved out like a week later. And I got an agent and I hit the road. I was like, book the fuck out of me. And, you know, I started just touring out of rage, I think.
Yeah, rage tour. It's like the revenge body after a breakup, except by it was revenge career.
So I did kind of start that way. I was like, so I just like hit the road nonstop for like 5 years and then just completely burned myself out.
Yeah.
See, my 20s and 30s were so full of extremes. I think there was something inside of me that was just like, you know, making me run from my internal trauma.
Kevin,
it took a long time. I know.
That's very real. I mean, I don't know how extreme my burnouts are compared to yours, but compare to spare. But I definitely had a burnout period this winter, and you're kind of finding me in this new season of the actual podcast new season, but also this new season of life where I'm trying to just find more balance. And I think like the running away or the running to the quote unquote me being successful or the running away to the end, quote unquote end goal of this is where I'll feel happy is just not attainable. And just being happy in the now is a struggle for me, but like I think it is very common for that running to and then the burnout and then like the repeating of the cycle. So it's very cool to see you kind of like in this season for yourself of taking care of yourself as you go. Since we are talking about this journey, I need to ask you the famous podcast question. Kevin James Thornton, Whose fault? Is it that you're gay? Who do we blame, babe?
I can pinpoint the exact moment. I was in seventh grade, and I started hanging out with this guy, and we would have like sleepovers, and I'd go over to his house after school all the time. This isn't going where you think it is. And his mom was this like cool, weird character. The friend was okay. He was like super hyper, like definitely undiagnosed ADHD in like 1986.
Yeah.
But his mom was really cool, and she would like talk to me as an adult. And that was the first adult who'd ever talked to me like that. So I'd go over to their house really to hang out with Faye, his mom. And she would just talk to me about the world and things. And she loved like Rocky Horror Picture Show and John Waters. And she introduced me to all of that stuff. But then my friend, while his mom was at work, he was like, I need to show you something. And he brought me up to his mom's room. And she had a huge stack of Playgirl magazines. And so he was like, this is so hilarious. And he just started like opening these Playgirl magazines, and I'd never seen that before. And so, of course, I was like, oh, my God. Like, but he was like, isn't this so funny? And I'm like, yeah, it's hilarious. So I was like, as long as we're laughing.
Look at the hard cock on that one. Hilarious. Yeah.
So he like sat on Faye's bed looking at Playgirls, and I made sure occasionally to like laugh because it was a joke. And then I remember multiple times I'd go over there and I'd be like, wouldn't it be hilarious if we went up and looked at those Playgirls again?
What if we circled back to Playgirl? How fucking nuts would that be?
And eventually he was like, Jesus, Kevin, it's not that fucking funny. Like,
why are you laughing this hard at the 14th edition we've looked at today? I mean, I gotta say, I love Faye. I don't know the gal, but Faye was doing a good service, and I'm glad her name is one of a character actress from the 50s. Like, Faye? Yeah. No. I'm picturing a wide brim hat. I'm picturing the mean stepmom from The Parent Trap. I'm just picturing any sort of gorgeous dame who we must not also discount the mothers who spoke to the young gay boys like we were human beings. And I think that is requiring a moment of gratitude to Faye for doing that, because Kevin, you must have been such a quippy little fagatrini when you were 11, right? I mean, come on. Can only imagine.
I was learning. You know how that friendship ended? He actually started calling me fag on a regular basis. And I think it's because he sensed I liked the Playgirls a little too much.
Right.
And you know, when you're in seventh grade, especially then, we didn't even really know what that word meant exactly. But he just started saying it all the time, and we were at the mall one Sunday afternoon, and I was like, call me a fag one more time and I will turn around and leave and never speak to you again. And there was like, it was like the perfect comedic timing. It was like a pause, and then he was like, fag.
Yep.
and I turned around and got on the bus and never spoke to him again. He got stung.
Stung like a fucking queen bee.
That's right.
Did it feel powerful to walk away?
But it was like it was the emergence of like a core part of my personality, I think.
Also, like, how strong for a seventh grade fag to be like, call me fag one more time, knowing deep down what you were. I wish I had that strength. I think I mostly just cried in the backseat of my parents' car. But
yeah, I did that too.
Yeah, but wow, that call me fag one more time.
That's going to be the name of my next comedy special, I think.
Honestly, we'll watch, and we'll gladly amplify call me fag one more time. I can't fucking wait. So can you paint a picture of, geographically speaking, where was all this happening? Where was your childhood?
I grew up in Evansville, Indiana.
Oh, and a Hoosier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, and this is like before the internet. So the world seemed super small, you know, like you couldn't get online and find other people that like yourself, you know, it was just the voices around me, you know, and everyone in that town was either super churchy or super, like, I don't know what the word would be, like drinking and smoking kind of Indiana people. It was, you were one of the two.
Sinners.
So, right. Sinners and non-sinners. Heathens, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so I hung out with the church people and, you know, there was nothing else to do, especially if you were a teenager. And the churches were like every night of the week in some church gymnasium, there was pizza. So maybe that's where my love of pizza began. There was pizza. There was a church party like every single night. So, you know, you had one of two ways to go. So I went to church.
Well, there's one of my favorite videos of yours you did recently where you talked about you were 14 and your church put on a haunted house and they had like a bunch of mannequins, I guess, to like portray different sins of, and you took a mannequin home and tell the dolls, what did you do to this mannequin?
First of all, this was before that Ryan Murphy show about the serial killer.
Okay.
Like apparently there's something in that that's very, I haven't seen it. This story has nothing to do with that. My story is wholesome. I took this. It was a styrofoam. It was made out of styrofoam. And I set it up in the corner of my room and I put clothes on it. And then like I started out like, I think I should probably like see what I look like when I'm kissing someone. So I would like, I brought the mannequin over to my mirror and like gently kissed the mannequin and then kind of looked in the mirror to see like, do I look like super fucking hot right now? you know, it was a girl mannequin. So then,
I don't know why I was picturing a full on male fuck toy. Sorry.
No, it was a girl. And then like I did a kiss with like a styrofoam tit grab, you know, kind of just to see how I looked doing it, you know?
Well, I do certainly remember wanting to grab the tit of a mannequin at a mall just to see what, and I'm sure I did. I think, remember how the mannequins had quite realistic nipples?
Yes. They don't anymore, do they?
I don't think so. I think they removed areola, but kind of a shame because while, not to go too cliche, but while as a gay man, I am very far on the scale of gay where I'm not going to sleep with a woman.
Me too. I'm all the way to the Kinsey 6.
I'm a Kinsey 6 as well, but you do have to, you know, marvel at the beauty of a breast. I mean, so when you're a young child and you're going through Macy's and you happen to see the blouse dip under the areola, what are you going to do? Not squeeze it?
This is so hot right now.
You're a Kinsey 6 who loves talking about grabbing female styrofoam areola.
Yeah. I think it's because, so in that era, you know, you were supposed to be straight. And I was maybe just getting the first inkling that something was up, you know? So even that, like looking in the mirror, like how do I look if I was like grabbing a girl's breasts? It was like this weird performative thing for myself. Mm-hmm. It's fucked up, I guess. But I was like, you know, this is what straight me looks like, getting some boob.
Getting some boob, dude. But also, how else are you going to find out? You know, it's like I do carry some guilt that I found myself with a girlfriend in high school. And I knew deep down it was because I wanted to see if I could do it. It just like there's an experimentation that is cringy when you look back on it. But in a way, young queer people, I feel like there's like only so much you can do at that time specifically. I'm sure today it's a bit different with like, oh, wow, I can watch gay porn so easily and this is all I want to watch. So like kind of confirmed, but still.
Man, let me tell you, going through puberty with no porn, I was kind of a 11-year-old pervert, I think. I was so obsessed with because it was before the internet, so you couldn't just like look at your phone and there it was. So there was always like a gross stack of like dirty magazines under a log, like in the baseball park or something.
Yeah.
Or like in the woods by our house, like someone would hide a Hustler magazine or something. You know, it was like this constant search for like wild porn.
Yes.
I remember, one, obviously the Playgirl magazines that Faye had, but I couldn't like freely look at those. I was under my friend's scrutiny So I couldn't just like really look, you know, in the way I wanted to. But I remember one of the hustlers had a picture of a man and a woman, and they were sort of in silhouette, but you could kind of see his erect penis in the silhouette. And it just, I was just like obsessed with this photo. I had never seen that before. I think I tore that picture out and kept it for a minute. I wish I still had it.
I hope I framed
that shit.
You should. I mean, by the way, nowadays at a thrift market, at a fucking, what's it called? A flea market, that would fucking go sell for hotcakes. Yeah. But we all did what we had to do. I was at my father owns a pharmacy, and I would read the Cosmopolitan magazines and read like the tales about how women would put an ice cube on their boyfriend's balls. And then there would be, I would just like,
What does that do?
Oh, I don't know. That was just like, they would do the weirdest fucking things in Cosmo to get a girl to like...
Oh, that was like an erotic thing.
Yeah.
It sounds terrible.
They'd be like, okay, now you're going to get a bowl of honey. You're like, I'm listening.
It was always like the most random fucking shit. But I'm just pouring through it, putting the Cosmo inside of a Sports Illustrated.
Now I'm just going to hang out in the magazine aisle, Dad. Don't worry about me for hours.
But we did what we had to do. Did you have your first boy kiss in Indiana, or did you get out of state before that happened?
Oh, it was like sadly years later. I was probably, how old was I? Let me think. So the first, I want to circle back around to finding dirty pictures in the wild. I have one more story to tell, but, I think it was my first year of college, and it was a guy. So the first year I showed up at college, I was sort of fleeing Christianity and fleeing my hometown, but I still ended up going to this like campus church for a hot minute, like my first semester. And I met a guy there who was getting flirty. And one night he came over and we were sitting on the couch and he kind of like tackled me and started like feeling my genitalia. And I don't know why I said it like that.
I'm glad you did.
But
go on.
And then I did kiss him, but I think that was too much for him, and he kind of turned his head away. And then I jacked him off, and then he immediately got up off the couch and ran out of my house. So that my first kiss was sort of shrouded in shame.
A lot of religious shame.
Yeah. But then shortly after that, I met the guy that I dated through most of college, and that was like my first like real kiss. I was probably like 23 years old. And
where was that? Like, where was college, and where was this boy?
This was still in Indiana. It was at a school, a state school called Ball State.
Oh, but, yeah. Sutton Foster loves to teach there. Oh, Broadway queen. Go on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, I was a theater major, so this was years before her, but same department. So we were like standing in his shitty college living room, just making out. And I remember at 23 years old, like my mind was exploding because I was like, oh my God. Like, I'd kissed girls in high school and stuff, but it was the first time it was like, it wasn't a shameful after Bible study hand job kiss. It was, you know, one of those. that old thing. It was like a real kiss, and it was really, really nice. But I was, I think it's the thing that people maybe experienced when they were 16, that I was experiencing at 23.
No, I'm the same way. I mean, that was me, like, my first kiss was probably around 19, 20, but then my first, like, with someone, no shame, and then we're dating was, like 21, 22. And then you have to play catch up, but ultimately we put the work in, and the genitalia, it goes from a shameful Bible study genitalia grab to a shameless load.
Of course. If I could tell my other finding naughty pictures out,
please,
in the world story.
Let's hear about it.
There was a Barnes & Noble by my house, and in the Barnes & Noble photography section, there were some, honestly, today, these books could never exist on the shelf just for anyone to pick up. But there was a book of Robert Mapplethorpe photos, who took really I mean, if you look at these pictures today, you'd be like, oh, okay. But back then, they were so mind-blowingly explicit. Mm. You know, they were like close-ups of dicks hanging out of pants. And there's, you know, he had a self-portrait where he put a bullwhip in his ass. And he's like turned around with like a whip coming out of his ass. And like, it's the thing that sparked the whole Jerry Falwell censorship thing in the early 80s. Like, you know, censoring art and doing away with the National Endowment of the Arts because our tax dollars are paying for dicks hanging out of pants and whips coming out of Robert Mapplethorpe's ass. Mm-hmm. But I would go and like get that book and like hide in the corner and look through every page quite regularly. And I became a photographer later in life, and I often joke it was because of that book, and it kind of was.
Did your photography ever go into the portrait of humans? That's all it is.
I mean, I still do it. It's sort of my side passion.
Yeah.
I'm gonna put my own book together at some point with something hanging out of my ass.
And if it's not a bullwhip, it's gonna be.
I don't know. These headphones, I don't know. I'll put anything in my ass. It's going to be this remote right here.
It's just you with a Apple TV remote sticking out of your hole.
It's just page after page of...
different objects.
Different things I've put in my ass.
A Stanley cup. It's kind of its... every. It's the cup. It's a book of its time. Every era... a different object, yes. Leaning out of your hole. That's beautiful. It's, and again, Barnes, we thank Faye and we thank Barnes and Noble to the totally. Adult women who spoke to us like humans, and the Barnes and Noble gay and lesbian section.
Yes.
And yeah, huge, especially I'm also from the Midwest, and it's there was only so much you had, and I'm grateful to them. So when you did talk about this time of living in college, you had these like scary boy roommates that owned a bunch of guns in your home. Tell me, have you had any contact with these guys now? Because I always wonder, for someone who like grew up sort of either closet or newly out, full of shame, and now you're like living this public, proud, gay-ass life, have you crossed paths with them?
No, not at all. Especially those guys. That was such a weird scenario. There was this house on the outskirts of town, and all of these guys went to that campus church. That's how I met them. Mm. But they had this, one of them had this giant old house, and it was awful. It was filthy. There was like a hole in the roof, but it was free. You could live there for free. So there was a room open, and somehow I got the room for like rent free. But also the three other guys had tons of guns. There were probably 30 guns in that house, and they were all going out of town, and I had never held a gun in my entire life, and I don't know that I still have, except for this one time. They were all going out of town, and the house is sort of in a bad neighborhood, I guess. Mm-hmm. And the one guy was like, I'm gonna leave this with you just in case anything happens, and he puts a pistol on my nightstand, and I'm like, I'm not touching that. I wish that weren't even sitting there. But, and then I woke up at like 3 a.m. in that house by myself, and the dogs were going crazy at like 3 a.m. They were barking and like running through the house. And I was like half asleep, and I grabbed that fucking gun. I don't know what I was thinking. I was just scared. And like, I'm like walking down the stairs with this like gun, like I'm in a fucking like, I don't even know what movie I'm in, but I'm like holding it in this like stupid way, like walking down the stairs really
slowly.
You're
in a gay film noir.
Yeah. And the dogs are barking like crazy. And I'm like, I don't even know how to shoot this thing. Like, what the fuck am I doing? Yeah.
It's shaking hand.
That's my only interaction with a firearm in my whole life.
And then do you think they were barking at a ghost?
I guess. I don't know. They just calmed down, and then I went back to bed. I moved out of that house soon after that. It was terrible.
Jeez, these stories. You really have been through it. I certainly know what it was like to be around a toxic masculine man, but never have I ever been handed a pistol to protect the home with.
Yeah, right.
It's such a mind fuck to come back into the orbit of any sort of toxic man universe like that. And I bring this up because I was recently reunited with, I'll just say to respect anonymity, I was reunited with some extended family members. I was at a family wedding, and there's a family member who I think in a way is trying to show his love and how quote unquote cool he is with gay people. But the way that he shows that would be like physical signs of like a slap on the back or a grab of the neck. And because I think he's overcompensating, it felt menacing. Do you know? It felt like the only way he could communicate, yeah, I don't want to kill you because you're a fag, is by like making physical gestures that do feel like he does want to kill me. So it's like... Yeah. It's to be in a world where there's like, I don't know about when you're touring or when you're, you know, in your day to day, but I find myself now mostly around people who are like very used to gay people or are gay people, or it's very much like a very neutral zone. And then to be immediately put back into that is like a reminder of the environment you grew up in. And I just am thankful that I'm no longer surrounded by the guns of our past.
Yeah, me too. You know, there's this speaker, I've never said their name out loud before. I think it's Alok, maybe. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of like Instagram clips that I see of them. And they said this really profound thing that was like, it stuck with me. I saw this just a couple months ago. It was something to the effect of homophobia and transphobia. It sort of comes from this place of people's like own heartbreak about their own repression and their own inability to truly be themselves.
Yeah.
So when they see someone else living freely, it's very triggering. You know, and like I'd never really thought of it like that before, and I can't stop thinking about it now because there's always been a missing piece. Like, why are you so bothered?
Yeah.
Like, why are you so insane? You know, even right now, I sort of naively thought maybe we were past some of this stuff. But it's like there's been this new wave of demonizing trans people, demonizing gay people, and calling them pedophiles and whatever. It's like, is it 1982?
Yeah.
Like where, like it's some old like propaganda movie, like beware the homosexual. Like it's like, where is this
coming
from?
It's very Smokey the Bear being like, gay people will harm your children. There's, you know what's funny? You saying this makes me, I feel like I'm watching two things happen, which is on one side, we watch someone like you, or there are people who are just being so authentically themselves and proud of who they are, and that cultivates a fan base of people who really appreciate that. And then the other side of it, it does trigger the people who can't embrace themselves that way. And so then there's the opposite reaction. So it's almost like it's very fractured, where there's a group of people or of reactions looking towards the future and embracing that. And then the triggered people who are going the opposite and saying, well, fuck you, it's wrong because it makes me feel not enough or whatever it is. But there was something that you posted actually that I wanted to ask you about. Yeah, it's a really beautiful video about how you received messages when you had posted about a beautiful place you were. And they said someone messaged you and said they don't like you now because you're just, all of your content is just bragging. But really, you felt like it was just because you're doing well and you're being present and you're sharing your gratitude. And I think that's sort of a part of this, which is people interpreting almost a bad faith that you are coming from a place of look what I have and you don't, when really it's just look what I have and how great is that?
Yeah, you're right. It actually is a very similar dynamic, I think, because, someone might look at me. I was on tour in Europe all last month and I filmed a lot of it. And cause I was like, this is so amazing. I want to like show people. But yeah, if you looked at that and you're like, oh, great for you. Oh, that's just wonder if it kind of made you reactionary, it's like touching something inside of you, like your inner pain that you can't deal with. Like, why can't I get a break? Why am I struggling with money? This, you know, life is unfair. I don't want to see you doing well. It triggers me. It's the same kind of dynamic.
Yeah. How does it make you feel when you receive those messages? I'm always curious when you're so, in a way that I really look up to and aspire to, like open with your social media and you lean into sort of where you're at and being present in that moment. How do you react when you do receive a message of like, yeah, I don't like this. You're bragging. I don't like the energy you're putting out when it is coming from your place of gratitude and love.
Yeah, I don't know if this is the right answer or not, but I think a big part of it is just my age. Mm-hmm. Like at some point, like I said, I'm 50 years old, and it's really only in the last decade. It's like something shifted for me like after 40, and it was like, oh, I never even really conceived of life past 40, and here I am, and I actually feel more creatively viable than I ever have before. I'm more sexually active than I ever have been in my life. Like all of these things that's like, oh, I'm like past the age that I thought mattered, and I'm like really living now, you know? And it's like, I think there's something that only comes with that experience of years. I feel like I have a little more of an ability to like zoom out.
Oh my God.
And see the bigger picture. So if someone is upset with me or someone sends me like a weird message, or I just like, I remember when I would get reactionary or when I would get irrational and how silly that was, you know, and it, I don't know. There's just like a wisdom that comes with a little bit of age, I think.
Well, what you said is something that I literally try to do for myself, which I think is a sign of my age, my perspective, my neuroses, which is I get so zoomed in to the reaction, to where I'm at, to the day. And I always try to be like, just zoom out, zoom out, zoom out. But it's obviously harder said than done. Or it's easier said. What is the phrase? Easier said than done? It's easier said than done. And I look forward to being able to zoom out more because the whole thing about anxiety is worrying about the future. Depression is, you know, fixating on the past. And I think a lot of me, my anxiety is the zooming in. And mm-hmm. I look forward to fucking be able to zoom out without it being such an effort.
Yeah. It just started to naturally happen. Like I said, I definitely want to reiterate that I have lived in my car. I've been the brokest of broke. I was out of control 20-something, out of control 30. You know, I think a lot of people look at me like this wise creature, which maybe I have gained some of that. Mm-hmm. But I just need to preface it with I was a mess and for like the first half of my life. Listen. I still probably am, but like my perspective has shifted.
I know. And again, we love where you've come from and where you're going. And where we're going, Kevin, is asking the next famous podcast question, which is, if the world was ending, you could only save one character actress, who would you save?
So here's what happened. When I saw that question, I was like, oh shit, I have to Google character actresses because no one was coming to mind. And so now I'm Googling character actresses and I'm looking at like a lot of them I didn't know, but occasionally would see someone like Helena Bonham Carter was like, uh-huh. Oh, I guess she is a character actress. I like her, but I really didn't have any like strong feelings about any of them. And I was like, well, just pick one. It'll be fine. Just pick someone and fake it. But then I was like, then he's going to ask me questions to talk about that person. And then I'm going to devolve into complete bullshit.
Kevin, I made and you spiral. Oh, no.
You made me spiral. And so I was like, you know what? I'm going to be honest.
No, this is...
I can't yes and this one. I don't know.
Well, I'm going to yes and your spiral because it is so beautifully authentic. And it makes me even more curious about your pop cultural birthplace, about your journey. Mm-hmm. So let me ask some leading questions then so we can together find your North Star.
Okay.
When you were a young kid, so Faye introduced you to John Waters. What is like a pop culture thing? If you were to watch a movie that you've watched for decades or you could watch a million times, what is that movie or type of movie?
I absolutely love B movies. I love camp. I actually went back and watched Rocky Horror Picture Show for the first time in years, maybe just 3 or 4 months ago. And I really enjoyed it. Like if you see that in the theater and all of the spectacle that's happening and people are throwing shit, I don't know that I ever really sat down like quietly in my living room and watched that movie.
Yeah.
I'm like, I love this. I love everything about this movie.
Well, it's funny that you connect it to Helena Bonham Carter a little bit, and then we talk about Rocky Horror. So there's sort of like a macabre. There's sort of like that energy. I could even say, like, if you aren't an Angelica Houston stan, you should be. Were you like an Addams Family girl?
I do. So I saw that movie. I watched the original Addams Family like on Sunday mornings on CBS or whatever, you know, when they would play it in reruns. I liked the Munsters a little bit more, I think. If you remember the Munsters. Yeah, I totally like all that stuff. I love John Waters. I am a huge Divine fan.
Oh, yeah.
I actually have a drag character that I do on Instagram. I don't know if you know it or not.
I think I've seen it.
Yeah, it's called Cupcake Television.
Oh, yeah.
And that was actually my first attempt at something during the pandemic of like creating something out of boredom. Mm-hmm. Cupcake definitely got a little bit of an audience, but then I started blowing up as just being myself, and all of that makeup is a lot of work. But I love Divine. I'm very inspired by John Waters and Divine.
I think we should say your character actress is Divine. I think like,
oh, that's a good one. Yeah,
I think she's a gorgeous one, and I think that it makes so much sense, and no one has said her yet, and I think that you are a pioneer in many ways, so why not make this your pioneering character actress?
I love that. Yeah.
Decision.
You know what's funny about, this popped in my head about character actors. Mm-hmm. Like I mentioned earlier, I went to school for theater, and like the college theater department is such a weird little universe, but I just remembered there were a handful of students who sort of got labeled as the character actor, like girls and act, you know, to be like, you're a character actor. And so they just kept getting all these basically playing old lady roles.
Exactly. They're playing the mom. In the
And, but it's like, that was a real disservice to Tamra because she's not a character actor. She was just the only one who could play the old lady in college.
So. Exactly. By the way, we need to pour one out for our girlfriends in theater school who only played either the mom or the crotchety neighbor and oftentimes, if we're being fully honest, and feel free to cancel me, but this is the truth to me, I think. To me, it was like the professors either seeing the ingenue or anything else that they thought was not quote-unquote conventionally pretty enough.
Totally.
Or small enough, or whatever the fuck it was. Now you're the character. Yeah. And of course, they were always told, you're not going to work till you're 40. Meanwhile, you're 19 years old in script analysis being like, so... Does that mean?
Right. And, or like they would go all the way through 4 years of acting school, sort of believing they're going to step out into the world and play old women in movies. And it's like,
meanwhile, they're 22.
Yeah.
And the people actually playing the old women are what? Old women. And by old, we mean in Hollywood standards, 39.
Right.
So God, pour one out. By the way, acting school as a whole is a mind fuck. I was told that I wouldn't work because I had too much turnout with my feet when I walked.
They were probably right about that one.
Well, and I guess I've never worked professionally ever. I'm kidding. That's the thing is I like listen to this. I'll say her fucking first name, Karen. That was her first name. Mm-hmm. And Karen, this teacher told me I need to work on my walk. And because I was a neurotic A-plus freak student, I was like, oh, is it like, do you think it's going to be a problem? She's like, oh, yeah, you'll have problem getting work if you walk with that much turnout. And
what a bizarre thing to say to somebody.
It's just this weird power thing that I think.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about.
I think it's a lot of. Teachers are the best of us, but I think acting school teachers, again, there are a lot of great ones and ones that I, you know, will to say good things till the cows come home, but there's also some who talk about acting out
for
of
sure.
their own insecurities and fucking...
Yeah. They finally showed up in a world where they are in control.
Yeah.
And they can... Yeah.
And then they're telling 19-year-olds that they need to get knee issues because they're forcing their toes to face exactly forward. But that's just me.
You've carried this around for a long time.
Can you tell? You know what I've also carried around is I have this existential crisis when it comes to social media, and I just want to ask you like very quick questions before we wind down this interview. Okay. So when you, for the gals like me who see the power and like the joy that can come from social media, but sometimes worry about the like pressure or what if I post this thing that is too cringy? What if I post this thing that doesn't land or whatever it is? What is your relationship to having grown your social media from the pandemic to now? And does it live in a place that's pretty like just a part of your daily routine? Or is it a part that you kind of have to like stomach through to actually utilize to the capacity that you are?
Yeah, you know, I didn't mean to do anything on social media. That was never my intent. It just sort of started to happen. And then I think when I saw the opportunity that was rising up, I was like, I am not going to waste this. I immediately turned it into come see me live, come to my show, buy a ticket to my show. Because I just felt like I don't know how long I'm going to have this attention. For a split second, I had the whole world's attention. My statistics were out of this world. And like so many people told me, like when they downloaded TikTok, I was the very first thing TikTok showed them. Wow. You know, and via TikTok and now Instagram, I have done two tours in Europe with like sold out theaters because of social media.
Incredible.
And but it's constantly changing and shifting, and like the TikTok algorithm is so different now than it was when I was really blowing up like 2 years ago. This is maybe like the Gen X in me, but like I started gathering email addresses. I'm like, I want to be connected to you in a way that is not an algorithm. So I feel like I made the most of like grasping people out of the algorithm just to me directly, because it's always shifting and fading. I don't love it. I think it, like trying to be a slave to the algorithm starts to feel anxiety inducing.
Yeah.
You can't control it. And like hinging your success on it is, I don't know. It's bad news.
Do you delegate any of the work to, have you hired people to help with like?
No, I've done it all myself.
Wow. Yeah. Jesus. It's so impressive. But again, I get the algorithm, like being at the hands of an algorithm does not feel great.
It doesn't. And you know, like lately I've been just sort of letting myself make different content because I'm not especially inspired. I know I got famous online for saying it was the 90s with the auto-tune thing, and that's the thing people love. But it's like if I post on TikTok, if I post anything that is not it was the 90s, it's like the robot overlord is like, nope. And that video will just die. And so a lot of times I'll just repost the hits and the algorithm eats it up all over again. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a daily battle and hustle, but from my perspective, it's just you do add so much joy through it, and I think that's kind of the most meaningful thing you can do, even despite an AI overlord robot algorithm.
Totally. Yeah, I mean, I have to be nothing but grateful because it changed my life and allowed me to connect with people in a way that I was never able to before. So
we love. Well, listen, I have so enjoyed talking to you, and before we officially sign off and you tell the dolls where to find you, I'm experimenting with new final podcast questions for this new season. So I'm gonna ask you a new question that you have not been prepped on, Kevin. If your friend's mom, Faye, made you gay, what would you tell us now is keeping you gay? What's the gayest thing around you that you enjoy leaning into? Pop culture, porn culture, sandwich culture, or otherwise?
Yeah, it's probably porn. I'm making up for what I didn't get when I was pre-internet. I love porn. I love sex workers. I love sexual liberation. And this is the thing I think my fan base would be shocked to hear me say. My photography work is very, it's not erotic. That's not my intent. But I love sort of like trying to capture the human experience, especially the sexual experience. I just spent so much time in my early life like being embarrassed and ashamed. Yeah. I love being free.
Yes. Amen to that. And I sometimes feel self-conscious, or some people will project their consciousness onto me of like, wow, you're really being sex forward, or wow, are you sure? And sometimes it's like, I just don't want to feel the shame. And I think normalizing the connection of it all is hot and important, and it is absolutely necessary. Kevin, what an amazing answer. And now tell us, where can we find you and what should we look out for?
I am on tour all year. I did almost 80 cities last year, and I'm doing it all over again this year. All of the dates, we're still working on my calendar, but there's already a ton of stuff on my website. It's kevinjamesthornton.com. I also have a podcast. I just started writing a book. And so like all of my stuff is always updated on my website, kevinjamesthornton.com.
KevinJamesThornton.com. I will also link all the socials in the description. And Kevin, I'll see you around the globe and on the internode.
Yeah.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of That's a Gay Ass Podcast. And if you enjoyed this week's with Kevin James Thornton and last week's with Dan Savage, you better be subscribed. There are more incredible guests coming up. And if you would like to have more bonus gay assery, go to the Patreon. $5 a month, you can hear this week's bonus episode about who we have coming up and the horny birthday party extravaganza I had for Matt. This has been such a delicious conversation, and I hope you are ready for next week's, because, oh boy, the gays are gonna scream, and the girls are gonna cream, and the twirls are gonna bleam. So I was bleaming. Blue Cantrell, anyone? Okay, enough. I love you, bye.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is
Dariana. We call him Day-Day for short.
Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
You have 5 new messages.
Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week?
Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.